I want to welcome everyone to our Keeping on Track open line. Here at Lighthouse, we're celebrating 25 years in business and just entering our 12th year of doing open line. We have a few new exciting changes. First, we have our new 2019 open line format that comes with the launching of our new website. You can also find an archive of past topics on the publication event tab. So pretty much any question or thoughts that you have around your business, over 12 years, we have the topic covered, either in a publication or through a past open line. Very easy to find through a search program that we have there. Our third book, Cracking the High Performance Team Code, is now available. Available on Amazon. You can go right to our website and order it that way. We also offer skills testing now and 360s, which has been a huge hit with our clients. Our topic today is building a healthy, high-performance company. My name is Dana Barocca. I'm the CEO of Lighthouse Consulting Services. I'll be hosting today. We have a few housekeeping items, and we're going to jump right into our topic. For those of you joining us for the very first time at Lighthouse, everything we do goes back to our mission statement, bringing effective insight to your organization. We do this through the raising the hiring bar and assisting companies with a variety of services, including in-depth work style and personality assessments, skills testing, 360s, interpersonal coaching, team building, stress management, and much more. We have an office in Taiwan and the UK, so if you have an operation in Asia or Europe and would like to get leadership coaching for them or providing ideas for how to interact best with a U.S.-based company, just let us know. Our Keeping on Track open line series is always in response to the number of calls we get from many of our clients, both domestically and globally, to address the various business issues that organizations are facing today. Our goal is to make this an interactive program, so on your screen you'll see an area you can send questions or ideas during our discussion, and we'll attempt to respond to as many of you as possible. So please join us with your thoughts and insights along the way. At the conclusion of the program, we're going to open up the line so you can talk directly with our guests. So again, just write down notes along the way and either submit them or hold them off. Our special guest today is a very close friend of mine and Ellen at Lighthouse. They are Larry Comp and Terry Comp are not close friends, but business colleagues, and we're very fortunate to not only have them on our program today, but to have them as very dear friends. Larry affectionately is known as the local, quote, comp guy, serves as managing principal of LTC Performance Strategies, Inc. Over the years, Larry and his team have helped close over 500 leading organizations across the industry, utilize innovative total compensation solutions to attract, motivate, and retain quality performers. Retention is going to be key over the next 24 months. So you'll really want to pay attention to this topic today. A prior leader, Larry, was with Nissan and Baxter Healthcare. Larry holds a master's degree in human resources management and has been recognized as a certified management consultant and is the author of the recently released book, Executive Compensation for Private Company CEOs and Business Owners. I feel so privileged to have Larry with us and Terry today to share ideas that will help us in preparing for the future and for dealing with today's business issues. Registration for our next program will begin at the end of this program. The topic will be the organized executive. We're very fortunate to have Bruce Breyer, who's he's been speaking for Vistage for over 25 years, and his topic is not only being organized, but how to work with our limited amount of time that we all have. So, Larry and Terry, welcome back. It's all yours now.
All right. Thanks, Dana, for the very warm welcome. It's always a pleasure to be on your program. We've got a lot to cover and tend to talk a bit fast. I want to make sure that there's plenty of time at the end for any questions anybody has. So let's jump into it. So I guess first, you know, what is a healthy high-performance company? What does it look like? What are some of the key characteristics? You know, it may sound like jargon, but I'd like it's actually the topic of our fourth book that will be coming out. It's probably going to be CEO's Guide to Building Healthy High-Performance Companies, and it's really our passion. So let's talk a little bit about visually, you know, what this looks like. Often we ask our CEOs to describe their companies and the culture. And, you know, for instance, do their companies look more like eagles flying in formation or perhaps seagulls crashing into one another? And we almost always get the response, kind of a nervous laugh and you know, an admittance that it's really more like seagulls crashing into one another. So obviously there's still a problem with goal clarification and alignment. But when Terry and I are asked about this concept of healthy high performance companies, we describe them as the kind of companies we'd all like to work for, you know, true employers of choice, and we find that they share a number of key characteristics. But the overriding one is they're exceptionally clear on what's most important. So, for instance, they know who they are in terms of their values. They've taken a good bit of time to really understand their niche, their purpose in the market, you know, in other words, their mission. They know where they're going in terms of their longer-term vision. They have a playbook and a roadmap, so they know where they're going in terms of their strategy. They're committed to and continually develop their people. What's a little bit more rare, but we're going to share as the secret sauce, and that is that they've taken the time to not only teach their employees about business in general, but more specifically about their business. That's been probably the most important but maybe least understood concept of this whole idea of building healthy high-performance companies. We'll talk more about that. They hold each other accountable. And lastly, they share in the risks and rewards of the business. But you got to start somewhere. So let's look at that next slide. You know, how do we begin the journey? Go back one. Oh. So basically, sorry, I have a little trouble with this. Okay, so in terms of, Dana seems like it's kind of jumping around. Let me try that again. Okay, so you basically, sorry it's jumping around, but what we find in talking with these organizations is that most people and most organizations make the same mistake. They start their planning from where they are, and they move incrementally through life. Instead of what you probably remember Stephen Covey in his book, his last thing he mentioned was begin with the end in mind. He really wanted to, in other words, paint the perfect picture of the desired result and then work backwards from there. But at the same time, also be very clear on your starting point. You know, for instance, who are your customers? Why do they buy from you? Who are your better customers? And a lot of times we'll suggest beginning with an initial SWOT analysis, and a lot of you have done that, you know, an analysis of your strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. But we do suggest to start with that, but also to go back after you've gone through the work of creating the roadmap, because a lot of the assumptions will change. So in terms of creating the roadmap, one of the things that we've talked at great length with our companies about is the importance of recognizing everybody's inherent value and literally getting everybody on the same page. We've all heard the description, you want to get everybody on the same page. But we realized the importance of that and actually created something we call a success chart, or we now call it the roadmap, and in essence, it really is getting everybody on one page. This is in contrast to the normal approach that companies take to strategic planning. A lot of companies take their time to even do strategic planning. Some never get there. But the ones that do, and a lot of us have all been through this before, the typical approach is consulting comes in, you go off-site for a day or 2 days or 3 days, you generate some excitement, you generate a lot of paperwork, and you come back after the strategic planning session, pretty jacked up with binders, but unfortunately, we all know that those binders tend to sit on the bookshelf, and the information quite often isn't shared with the rest of the organization. And, we realize everybody is important and that should be shared. So we've gone to great lengths to create this concept called the one-page roadmap. And basically the idea there is you get all of the key information, vision, mission, and values, the dominant value proposition, which we'll talk about, the big picture strategic goals, and then also the drivers. Mission, vision, and values, a lot of times people get mixed up in terms of the differences between mission and vision, but we go to great lengths to try to clarify. We give a lot of examples. And we also talk about the importance of keeping things simple. One of the things I remember we came across a definition of intelligence is taking the complex and making it simple. And we think about mission statements we've seen, like the famous Johnson & Johnson one, which was 17 pages long, very eloquent, but who's going to remember that? So we really strive to get our clients to be able to get mission, vision, and values so tight that they can literally fit on the back of a business card. This concept of dominant value proposition, many of you have come across that before, but for those of you that maybe haven't or need a quick refresher, we're suggesting that every organization that is on its journey to building a healthy high-performance organization determines what their dominant value proposition is, realizing that they need to give adequate focus to the two or three different choices, but determine one that's most important. And those value propositions are customer intimacy, operational excellence, and product leadership. And customer intimacy, basically, that's like the Nordstrom model. You're dealing with a narrower audience. You're treating each customer like a king or queen. You're working on tailored solutions. It's very different than the next one. Operational excellence is kind of like Costco, Southwest Airlines, maybe McDonald's is the best example, where you're really talking about dealing with a mass audience and continually to focus on improving processes, driving out unnecessary costs, becoming more effective and more efficient, and working towards being the lowest total cost provider. Not necessarily the cheapest in price, but the lowest total cost provider in terms of experience. And then one we see a little bit less familiar, but you'll see it with highly creative organizations like Disney, high-tech organizations like Intel, is the product leadership model. Intel is maybe, in our mind, the best example, whereas they try to make their own chips obsolete before the competition does. And so usually we'll engage leadership team in a quick overview of the value propositions and stage a debate and have them work until they get a consensus as to what their dominant value proposition is, and then we also incorporate that on the roadmap, the one-page roadmap. Big picture goals, there's no magic to how many goals there should be. We generally suggest a balanced scorecard, meaning a handful of financial as well as non-financial goals. typically 4, 5, or 6 goals. Again, incorporate that. And the thing that's often missing, we also incorporate, we call drivers. And those are, in essence, the mini goals. So, for instance, if the company says that they want to increase revenue from X to Y, you can't just twitch your nose like that old show Bewitched and make sure that happens. You know, you have to really determine, you know, what are the key activities, what are the key mini goals that if we achieve them, will increase the likelihood of achieving those big picture goals. So we incorporate those drivers also, and they may be revenue drivers or profit improvement drivers. By the way, one of the aha moments that we discovered along the way was the importance of focusing on process improvement. And we found that all things being equal, that those companies that focus on process improvements, everything else improved. All right. Next thing we want to talk about is moving from an activity to goals orientation. And
Larry, before you go into that, we have two questions that came in.
Okay.
Have you had much experience implementing these HHP initiatives? And
yes,
second question that, Oli, what kind of results have your clients experienced?
Okay, great question. Yeah, we've worked with several organizations of all different sizes in terms of these healthy high-performance initiatives. Some, you know, wanted to take it a little further than others, but all of them have had really good results. The companies, by and large, have reported improvement in all the metrics. So the numbers have improved, the revenue's gone up, profitability's improved. Better processes, more improved culture. So we usually survey the companies, and we've also asked the employees about their experience, which is very important. And a lot of them have shared that they felt like they were kept in the dark before, and through this kind of initiative, they understand the big picture. They don't feel like a cog in the machine. They understand how their individual jobs make a difference. Going through the process improves their level of engagement, actually makes them feel more secure, and, of course, it's all tied to the pay-for-performance initiative, so the better the companies do and the better the employees do, the better the reward. So we've seen some organizations, you know, do extremely well. We're always asked, you know, what to expect, and we try to be conservative by saying, you know, the first year you ought to be doing pretty well. Next year you'll be doing very, very well, and by the third year you're flying. And what's exciting for us is when we get a call 3 or 4 months into the initiative and we're told by the CEO or the team that, well, we're already flying, and that's great. We just say, okay, that means you're doing the right things in the right way. So we do a lot of things. Again, we get teased because our last name is comp, or because they're local comp guys. But this has really become our passion because it's the biggest opportunity for us to make a difference. Does that answer the question?
Oh, that's perfect. Thank you.
Good? All righty. So this movement from activity goals orientation, you know, it seems kind of basic. But, you know, what we've seen, and you've seen it too. You see two employees walking towards the water cooler, and natural question, how you doing? And the typical response for a long time is one word, busy. You know, busy. Oh, we're just so busy. And we understand that because, you know, companies are facing a lot of change, and they're raising the bar. But we're concerned because without going through this kind of initiative, we're finding that a lot of employees are not doing the 80-20. They're not focusing on that 20% of the activities that achieve 80% of the result. Sometimes they're not doing the right things, and oftentimes they're not doing the right things the right way. And so we really focus a lot on this goal-setting process. And a lot of companies know about the SMART formula. You know, goals should be specific, measurable, action-oriented, realistic, and time-sensitive. But along the way in teaching this, what we've come to realize is that even most CEOs have the darndest time selecting the right goals. So we've really tried to get that down to science to make sure from an effectiveness standpoint versus efficiency that companies first are picking the right goals, and then they're also making sure that they're aligned appropriately and maybe even more importantly that they're compatible across the organization. Because when they're not compatible, like for instance, sales might be taken off one direction, operations in another, and if the goals are in conflict, things kind of break down. So we work very, very hard to build this goal orientation and to teach everybody how to pick the right goals and how to articulate and how to align those goals and how to cascade them very carefully through the organization. The next component we want to talk about is something, you know, near and dear to you, Dana, and that is attracting top talent. You know, what's interesting, we've seen for years in corporate annual reports the statement that you all know what that is. People are our greatest what? People are our greatest asset. And we've seen that, you know, year after year after year, and we're kind of tired of seeing it. But we've noticed a change in paradigm. Probably the last year and a half, 2 years, what we're finding is a movement away from that to it's our best people who are our greatest asset. And that's very interesting. And we realize that every person you hire, and you're going to have some turnover, whether it's voluntary or involuntary turnover, but every person you hire gives you an opportunity to upgrade your organization. And I know I was blessed with the opportunity early on in my corporate career to work with our corporate psychologist on selection effectiveness. And even Dr. Roth said that, you know, if you're 80%, I mean, if 80% of the people that you hire work out, then that's about as good as you can expect. But we know that you know, you can maybe even do better by utilizing organizations like Lighthouse, and we're so proud and appreciative with what you and Ellen have done, Dana, to make a difference. In fact, we've had several clients that we've talked to that we share that have told us that they won't hire anybody without going through Lighthouse. So attracting that top talent is extremely important. Going on to the next slide, grow or die. We've all heard that before, and it's true. But most of the time when you think about this, you're really talking about how to grow the organization. But if you think about this concept of healthy high performance, there's about a dozen or so, or depending on how you cut it, really key aspects of this. And the important thing is it's divided into two areas. One is the things you can do to strengthen the organization, but the other is the critical things that need to be done to strengthen the people. And so what we've seen is the first natural tendency is to raise the bar and to take off and really focus on doing what you need to do to grow the organization. But without adequate attention to engaging the people and growing them in parallel, people tend to burn out and they leave. And that's, you don't want that kind of voluntary turnover. We've also seen organizations that understand the importance of developing their people, and they put a lot of focus on that without the right focus on developing the organization. And when you're growing the people, conversely, to how you're growing the organization, if you're growing the people faster, then they're going to get bored and they're going to leave on their own. So it's important to really be committed to both areas and to grow both elements in parallel. Something that you've all seen is frustration for decades with performance appraisal systems. We've seen the last couple of years some very prominent companies just decide they're going to chuck their appraisal programs because everybody's frustrated and they weren't getting the results. And we can understand that. Some of you may have seen that. Some of your organizations may have done that. But in this age of pay-for-performance where pay-for-performance gets more important each year, we feel you can't throw the baby out with the bathwater. And so a growing and increasingly important of our business has been focusing on what we call these integrated performance growth systems, because as we all know, you can't have a good comp program without a good performance appraisal, performance development program, and vice versa. So, and we do know that people are really craving feedback, and so they want these more frequent touch bases and these more progressive areas of focus. So that's something we want to mention also is very key. Next thing we want to talk about is measuring performance. Sorry, I jumped again. Measuring performance, both at the organizational level and the individual level. You know, a lot of companies, you know, CEOs bring everybody together and say, okay, well, next year, you know, our key goal is going to be we got to increase this level or this level. You know, we're going to grow our revenue. Okay, well, what does that really mean? You know, if you're not really specific, it's hard to hit a moving target. So we, going back to that balanced scorecard, we ask organizations to start with what is a realistic stretch goal for whatever those key goals are. Could be increasing revenue, improving profitability, improving safety, implementing a number of targeted process improvements, improving the internal culture. But rather than just have some vague measurement, we ask to start with you know, what are realistic stretch goals, but then also identify what are threshold levels, the minimum level of acceptable performance, also what is knocking it out of the park look like. And to be able to not only identify that, but tie pay to performance at all those different levels and continuously discuss this along the way. Companies have gotten a little bit better at that, but we're finding that they're not as good or don't have the same attention on measuring individual performance. And we find that if you're tying your pay for performance system only to the organizational performance, then in essence what you have is a profit sharing plan. And the ones that are going to be most excited about that are your poor performers. And you don't want your best performers leaving. Your best performers want to focus on continuing to do better and better, and you have to have the right metrics and measures in place to measure their performance and then tie pay to performance, which leads us to the next component or the next slide. Retaining top performers. Sorry for the difficulty. My computer is jumping back and forth. Let me get back on there. Okay. Again, we talked about the importance of focusing on your best performers. And because turnover is so expensive, you know, I think most experts will say the cost of turnover is anywhere from 33% of somebody's salary to maybe 200 or 300% of that. And so what do you do about that? We've created a very simple total rewards model. If you can visualize, there's four quadrants, and they represent why somebody's going to leave an organization. And maybe you can think for yourself when you've left organizations in the past. The top left quadrant is pay, and that could be base pay, short-term, long-term, incentive pay. Top right quarter, benefits. The lower left quadrant, culture. And the lower right quadrant, development. So when you, many years ago when I was at Nissan, to maybe paint a picture around this, the pay was good. I was very happy with the pay. The benefits were exceptional, about as good as I could find. The culture was, at the time, or most of the time I was there, was really fantastic. In fact, it was very rare for somebody to leave. But because of that, because people weren't leaving, they're you know, I felt a little frustrated as far as my own development opportunities, which is what caused me to leave. So we ask clients to come up with, and we help them if they want, to come up with a total rewards model. And we ask them to step outside another paradigm, and that is where they have pretty much taken a traditional approach to compensation. So, for instance, when you think about merit increases, the average merit increase for the last several years has been 3%, and so if you're in charge of managing compensation and you look at the department worksheet that comes in and there's 30 people in the department, you know, you might find that the vast majority get 3% increases, and there's a couple that get 2.5% and a couple that get 3.5%. And that kind of flies in the face of human behavior. And again, this is something I'm sure you can really appreciate, Dana. And so what we're suggesting is if you really have a philosophy of pay for performance, then pay for performance. And what we're finding is that in the last year or so, in talking with a number of CEOs, they have confidentially and very quietly shared with us that they are pulling some people aside and, again, very quietly telling them, look, you know, we love you. We don't want you to leave the organization. Here's a 15% increase. And, of course, they're doing that on a case-by-case basis. And, again, it's because of this importance of differentiating rewards. And not only with merit increases, but also with bonuses. You know, a lot of organizations have gone away from the pool concept, and they're letting people know that their target bonus is X, which is typically a percentage of their base pay. But for somebody that truly knocked it out of the park, they're more inclined to give that person, he or she, a very strong bonus. So there's a lot of focus in these healthy high-performance organizations on attracting, motivating, and retaining these top performers. Talk for a second about managing your biggest investment. We ask people what their biggest expense or their biggest investment is in their organizations, and they have to think about it. And a lot of times, they're going to find it's compensation. It's people-related expenses, salaries, bonuses, overtime. And that could be anywhere from 30% to maybe 60% of their total operating budget. And we don't have the time to get into all this, of course, the different elements of compensation. But we say it comes down to one thing. You're either going to manage it or you don't. And from a big picture standpoint, when you're talking about managing compensation, it's really down to two things: intelligent design and very clear-cut, simple communications. One of the things we didn't realize before was that research has shown that most executives do not understand their compensation programs, especially the incentive-based ones, the short-term bonus programs, the equity and or non-equity types of long-term plans. And it's kind of bizarre because when you think about the word incentive, the root of the word incentive is to incent. And how can you incent somebody if they don't understand the plans themselves? So we feel that the communication and training aspect around compensation is every bit as important as the design. Okay, the next concept is to disrupt or be disruptive. And you're probably hearing this more and more. I don't remember hearing much about this until the last few years. I know we talked about this a lot in our Vistage meetings. And the reality is we know there's a war for talent out there, but there's just a general war among companies. And your competitors are going to try to commoditize you and disrupt you. And so what we suggest, without being harsh, is maybe you need to focus on disrupting the competition before they disrupt you. And I know we take it to heart here, you know, in terms of the performance and total compensation work that we do, we're very concerned about having anything we do being considered commodity. So we have a continual focus on trying to take things to higher and higher levels, more integrated solutions that provide unmatched value to our clients. having trouble with these slides. Sorry, guys. Okay, so this next one is managing change effectively. And, you know, we've covered a lot today, and all of these things focus on progressive change. But one of the things that we want to bring up that I know even we tend to forget sometimes is the law of physics, that while progressive change is good, that we're always going to run into the law of physics, and we all remember that's for every action there's an equal to or greater reaction. And so, you know, the things that we've talked about today, hopefully you'll recognize them as progressive and realize that everything you do either moves you forward or moves you backwards, but people don't generally like change. And as soon as you start to move forward, you're going to encounter resistance. Unfortunately, a lot of CEOs, a lot of executives, as soon as they hit that resistance, they give way to it and they kind of go back to the same old thing. And so now as we're working on these, we hit this very hard up front, and we tell the executives, you are going to face resistance. You've got to recognize that it's just it's in the natural order of things. But once you create your roadmap, you're sold on it, you need to just push through the resistance. You know, life's a serious game, business is a serious game, and everybody needs to take it seriously. And the last component we want to talk about is execute. You know, we work with a lot of entrepreneurial organizations. We work with a lot of publicly traded organizations that are trying to become more entrepreneurial. And entrepreneurs are a blast to work with. Unfortunately, many of them have ADD, and there's a tendency to chase shiny objects. We laughingly describe this as MMA or management by magazine article. And so, again, we try to dress this up front and say, you know, you are going to be tempted to try these different things, but once you have created your roadmap, you've shared this roadmap, it's important to be aware of these shiny objectives and just stay the course. We know from our research that the number one reason why CEOs fail is the failure to execute. So that brings us towards the end. We've covered a lot of ground in a short time. Some of you may feel like you probably need to take a couple of Tylenol after this. We've hit you with a lot of stuff, but we do welcome any other questions you might have on this.
So, Larry, a question just came in. Of all the various components you have outlined, are there any that seem more important than others?
Good, excellent question. Yeah, all of them are important, but the one thing that we discovered along the way in looking at our various case studies that caused organizations to take the biggest leap forward, believe it or not, was teaching their employees about business and especially their own business. So we call that transitioning, quote, employees to business partners. We find that when we do that, that really makes the whole pay-for-performance program much more potent. And we've seen organizations just get incredible results because people are hungry. The employees are hungry to be developed, and a lot of them really don't know how. A lot of them are a little far away from what they can do to drive revenue and profitability, but they certainly can improve processes and make other changes, and they want to feel like, everybody wants to feel like they're making a difference, and we can find no better way to help employees to make a difference than taking some time and over a period of time teaching them about simple business concepts and helping them to recognize how each of their jobs makes a difference.
Let's thank you. That's great. We're going to open up the line in just a minute here, then we'll turn the recording feature off since we've been told that by others they don't want their voices being recorded during Q&A time. We have quite a number of people on the program today, so if I could ask everyone to please mute your phone. Don't put it on hold, otherwise we're all going to hear music and then we'll have to stop. Just put your phone on mute, and then when you have a question, unmute your phone and then pose your question to Larry. First, before we close down, I want to thank Larry very much for participating in Open Line again. You always have so many helpful ideas. Our next program will be on May 16th. We'll send invites out for that, called The Organized Executive by Bruce Breyer, who's an outstanding speaker for Vistage for many years and has won lots of awards. So if everyone can please stand by, put your phones on mute, and we'll be right back for live Q&A. Hold on for one second.